on River Street, turn left on Encinal. That's the light. Go all the way down Encinal to Dubois Street. It's the last street. Turn left. Look on the right. We'll be in a big field. Plus that night, Subversive Short Films, food, and music with the Trash Orchestra. And again, that's Friday, April 20th, 8 p.m., the 5th year anniversary of the Santa Cruz Gorilla Drive-In, showing Dr. Strangelove. See you there.
This is Freak Radio Santa Cruz. Fuck the FCC.
But in the bullshit department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe. In awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-perfect, all-knowing, and all-wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars. They pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit. Thank you. But, thank you. Thank you very much. But I want you to know something. This is sincere. I want you to know, when it comes to believing in God, I really tried. I really, really tried. I tried to believe that there is a God who created each of us in his own image and likeness, loves us very much, and keeps a close eye on things. I really tried to believe that, but I got to tell you, the longer you live, the more you look around, the more you realize something is fucked up. Something is wrong here. War, disease, death, destruction, hunger, filth, poverty, torture, crime, corruption, and the ice capades. Something is definitely wrong. This is not good work. If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed. Results like these do not belong on the resume of a supreme being. This is the kind of shit you'd expect from an office temp with a bad attitude. And just between you and me, in any decently run universe, this guy would have been out on his all-powerful ass a long time ago. And by the way, I say this guy because I firmly believe, looking at these results, that if there is a God, it has to be a man. No woman could or would ever fuck things up like this. If there is a God, if there is, I think most reasonable people might agree that he's at least incompetent and maybe, just maybe, doesn't give a shit. Doesn't give a shit, which I admire in a person and which would explain a lot of these bad results. So rather than be just another one of these mindless religious robots blindly believing that all of this is in the hands of some spooky incompetent father figure who doesn't give a shit, I decided to look around for something else to worship. Something I could really count on. And immediately, I thought of the sun. Happened like that. Overnight, I became a sun worshiper. Well, not overnight. You can't see the sun at night. But first thing the next morning, I became a sun worshiper. Several reasons. First of all, I can see the sun. Okay? Yeah. Unlike some other gods I could mention, I can actually see the sun. I'm big on that. If I can see something, I don't know, kind of helps the credibility along, you know? So every day I can see the sun as it gives me everything I need. Heat, light, food, flowers in the park, reflections on the lake, an occasional skin cancer. But hey, at least there are no crucifixions, and we're not setting people on fire simply because they don't agree with us. Sun worship is fairly simple. There's no mystery, no miracles, no pageantry, no one asks for money, there are no songs to learn, and we don't have a special building where we all gather once a week to compare clothing. And the best thing about the sun, it never tells me I'm unworthy. I became
a sun. And coming up next on Free Radio, thank you, George Carlin, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, 2 hours of civil rights in and out of Santa Cruz. We're going to have a couple of guests calling in, and I'll be talking about that in a moment. Stay tuned. Stay tuned a little longer. It looks like the tape deck is having its problems. I'm going to have to resort to my own subversive methods here, and I will. So stay with me.
We'll live in. Gotta let strangers do the
That was Ain't No Way to Go Home from the Grassroots from 30 or 40 years ago, or is it 40 or 45 years ago? Anyway, welcome to Free Radio, or I should say welcome to my show on Free Radio. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides twice a week, this time for a mere hour and 45 minutes, and on Sunday for a couple more hours beyond that, you get to hear and get to talk on Free Radio about hopefully local issues, particularly issues concerned with civil rights for folks outside. I mentioned to you earlier that I'm going to be having a few phone guests on the air, and I can find them. Boy, screens disappear on here faster than you can say Jane Robinson on this computer, but let me try again. We're going to be having a call in at 6:30 from L.A. Ken. That's the Los Angeles Community Action Network, which has been covering the situation in Los Angeles for poor and homeless people, particularly the situation on Skid Row. And that is something I've talked a lot about. It's the Jones decision. Jones is one of, I think it's five or six plaintiffs who sued the city of Los Angeles after they were arrested for sleeping at night when they had no legal place to go. And they won. They won in federal court at the level of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And that's a circuit that covers all of us. So in theory, Santa Cruz is bound by that decision. Of course, John Barisoni, our city attorney, doesn't think so. Ryan Coonerty, the attorney on the city council and our vice mayor, as well as the co-owner of a bookshop Santa Cruz, or BS Santa Cruz, as I sometimes call it, doesn't think so either. So according to him, it's okay to continue arresting homeless people and citing them with $90 tickets. It can escalate up to $850 within a month or two if they're not paid. Even though there's space tonight with the Armory winter shelter closed for about 40 people out of a total population outside, in the city alone, mind you, of 1,500 to 2,000 people. And that's a disgrace. It's a city disgrace, and it's a civil rights violation. But more important, it's a financial liability for the city. And hopefully, when we actually find the attorneys to do it and get that rolling, we will have a lawsuit that will rock the city council and city attorney John Barisoni and hopefully change things. And we'll see what happens with that. If you're interested in helping with that effort, if you have any legal expertise or you know anybody who does, we have one attorney signed up. We just need a second to really proceed. Give a call to the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's also my number in case you want to leave me a number off air. And I will answer your call if you leave me a contact point or mention where you're hanging out in a day or two. And who knows, you might be able to get me to meander down that way. Or you can try to find your way to a Huff meeting. Huff meets every Wednesday in the morning in the basement of the county building at the American Cafe, the cafeteria in the county building, the five-story county building at Ocean and Water Streets. And check it out. Pretty lively meetings. We are, again, working on that sleeping ban lawsuit as well as a number of other things, some of which we'll be talking about today. Let me roll into a couple of things. Fort Ord, man found dead on the beach, a transient. Sheriff's investigators released the name of a slain man, according to the Monterey Peninsula Herald, found on the Fort Ord Dunes Beach earlier this month. This is actually a story from yesterday. Robert Ray Kirwan was a transient who apparently died from a beating to the head, deputies said. His body was found by a ranger April 6th. Kirwan's age was not released. Deputies said Kirwan was last seen March 24th, leaving the Shell gas station on Canyon Del Rey Boulevard in Seaside. They said his body was found at a campsite previously occupied by Ruben Hernandez Barcena, 48 of Seaside. Deputies said Barcena has not been seen since he was released from county jail March 22nd. Officials said Barcena, who also used the name Sergio Castaneda, is considered a person of interest in the investigation who may have been a victim. In a written statement released Tuesday, investigators said Kirwan was robbed of money, identification, and his vehicle, a white 1989 Dodge van. So, but with all the joy beatings of homeless people, or troll bustings as they call them around the country, which I've been reading about, I wonder if this isn't one of them. I don't know if it is or not. And it's, of course, it happened across the way at Seaside, or Fort Ord, actually, I would guess is Seaside. Also across the way in Salinas, some gloomy news for medical marijuana advocates like myself. The city council voted to outlaw medical pot dispensaries on Tuesday night after an ominous presentation, according to the Salinas Californian newspaper in Salinas. After an ominous presentation by Salinas law enforcement officials and a 90-minute discussion about whether to allow marijuana dispensaries in the city, the Salinas City Council voted to outlaw their establishment. Police Commander Dan Perez described dozens of examples of medical marijuana dispensaries undermining the safety of a community. Boy, I haven't heard of one, so maybe I should try to get that tape and hear it. Including incidents in other cities where teenagers showed up to class intoxicated and a minor being solicited for sex by a person who had just purchased marijuana from a dispensary. Sheriff Mike Kanellakis and District Attorney Dean Flippo strongly urged Salinas officials to vote for the ban. Only Salinas resident Frank Pierce, who described himself as a cancer survivor, supported having pot more readily available for patients, with Jill Lutz voting against it, or perhaps it's Jyle Lutz, it's spelled capital J-Y-L, council member, apparently. The ban extension barely achieved the needed majority when council member Sergio Sanchez changed his mind and voted for it after receiving assurances that Salinas police would show leniency toward people who demonstrate a medical need to possess the substance. Again, trust your local police force. Government by the police rather than government by the city council or by, presumably, ultimately, us. It's kind of what we have in downtown Santa Cruz, and it's apparently it's what they voted for in terms of marijuana, medical marijuana enforcement in Salinas on Tuesday. There's a longer story about this. It gives you some background. The moral of the story, it seems to me, the immediate moral is that unless people show up, the other people write the law. We have a similar situation here in Santa Cruz where we actually passed a measure not just about medical marijuana, but about marijuana for adult use, whether for recreation, putting in your tea, putting over your head as a lucky charm, you name it. Possessing marijuana for private use in private has been ruled by our own initiative, by our own voters, by 63% of the voters, the lowest priority for Santa Cruz police. And so that's supposed to be overseen by the Measure K Commission, which is being challenged in court by our erstwhile drug-busting city attorney and John Barrasone, city manager Dick Wilson, and, of course, the city council, the Emily Riley. We're so liberal, but we don't want no stinking oversight committees watching our police department to make sure that they don't harass people for private use of marijuana by consenting adults in private spaces. Also, the problem seems to be that only four people have turned in applications for this Measure K commission. And unless folks show up, the people with the biggest bigotries and the strongest behind-the-scenes pull and the most deeply rooted prejudices are going to win here, and they are in the positions of conservative power. So I encourage people, if they want to apply for this Measure K commission, it's not hard. You give a call to 420-5020. Again, 420-5020. You can do it right now. It's a city council hotline. Ask the city council person who answers, it'll be a voicemail, to send you an application. You can even think you can actually download it online if you go online, but certainly to let you know and to give you a call back that you want to apply. You have to be a resident of the city of Santa Cruz. It means you have to be somebody who theoretically is a city voter in the city. So you can't, if you live in Live Oak, that won't work. If you live in Felton or Watsonville or North Dakota, that won't work either. And indeed, much of the money that supported Measure K came from out of the community. And many of the a number of the activists who've worked on it have disappeared from the scene. Andrea Tischler has moved to Hawaii, selling the Compassion Flower Inn. I think it's Karen Horner or Kate Horner? I never remember her first name, but she was the lead person in pressing for Measure K, lowest priority for recreational marijuana or all marijuana for private use by adults, consenting adults. She's gone back up to San Francisco, or perhaps where she lived in the first place. I'm not sure. So if people are concerned about stopping police from imposing their own agenda on the community, then it's time to act. Put through a call, 420-5020, and while you're at it, tell them to end the sleeping ban. Just for good measure. Anyway, here's an earlier story. Council OK's pot shop ban. Salinas City Council voted Tuesday. This was actually about a month ago or more, to ban the establishment of a medical marijuana dispensary in Salinas after a 45-day temporary ban was set to expire Friday. City staaff and law enforcement have through April of 2008, and they did, sorry, 2008, to come up with a set of ordinances that would officially put the ban into effect. And, of course, they came up with it and passed it on Tuesday, 2 days ago. A report from the city legal staff and the police department said that a ban would shield the city from both federal and state legal liabilities and criminal activity that has come with facilities in other cities. The council eventually agreed, voting 6-1 in favor of a ban. And, of course, they also, I guess, voted 4-1 in favor of a complete ban Tuesday. This is an earlier vote for a moratorium for 45 days and a ban on one particular dispensary, again, from Salinas. Council member Giles Lutz, again the same fellow, voted against it, arguing the city could allow a dispensary with restrictions that address any concerns. And then there's another story. It's no for medical pot in Salinas. The Salinas City Council voted unanimously Tuesday to, this was actually about the earlier vote, to enact a 45-day moratorium on establishing medical marijuana dispensaries, but three council members want the issue fully researched to make sure more patients who might need the drug have an opportunity to get it. And there's no indication, of course, that that actually happened, although if there was a 90-minute discussion at the Salinas City Council, perhaps it did. Councilwoman Giles Lutz, whose first husband died of bone cancer when he was 30 years old, said he was given marijuana by the Department of Agriculture as part of an experiment. The marijuana eased his suffering, she said. If people need it and it will make life more bearable, then we need to look at it, Lutz said. An unidentified petitioner said iniquities into opening a medicinal marijuana dispensary and because the city has no ordinance on the matter, administrators asked council members to enact one while the issue could be studied. Under voter-approved Proposition 215, the Compassionate Use Act of 1996, people with certain diseases are allowed to use marijuana with a doctor's recommendation, but Proposition 215 clashes with federal law. In 2005, the Supreme Court ruled that California's pot law violated the U.S. Constitution's Commerce Clause. Actually, it was not protected by the U.S. Commerce Clause, is what they ruled. California's law does not protect a person from prosecution under federal law. Police Commander Trevor, looks like Lida, speaking before the council Tuesday, said a pot clinic could be a magnet for crime. It's the magnet theory raising its nasty head again. That affects quality of life and safety, he told the council. Patricia Barajas, a representative of the drug counseling program Sun Street Center, spoke against having medical pot clinics, saying that selling marijuana could send the wrong message to young people. We come across people who start using drugs earlier and earlier, she said. Allowing dispensaries in the city is having them available indefinitely for our youth. Rather than on the black market, I guess you buy it in a dispensary. I guess there's also a danger in having alcohol being dispensed, but they're not out to criminalize that one, are they? Lutz challenged that notion. I don't believe opening marijuana clinics will encourage more marijuana use among children any more than giving drugs to terminally ill patients will encourage the use of more drugs, she said. There were people who spoke in favor of making the drug available to the sick. I have a friend who uses marijuana to increase his appetite because he's very sick, said Al Spindola, a Salinas resident. I'm having trouble even continuing reading with this. There are now no medical marijuana clinics in Monterey County, and it is the third time in the past year the issue has been brought before a municipality. Seaside and Marina have already banned such establishments. Councilwoman Gloria De La Rosa, who is a nurse, asked the staff to research how many people in the city needed medical marijuana. Councilman Sergio Sanchez, who has worked with terminally ill patients, said the public needs to make a differentiation between the drug's different uses. I see the benefits of it for medical uses and the negative effect in people who use it on the streets. He said the day you have some family member with AIDS or cancer, you'll want to give them whatever they need. Marijuana is allowed because it's needed. These two fine council members voted to ban the dispensaries 2 days ago. That's in Salinas. Here in Santa Cruz County, of course, we have a DA, Bob Lee, acting as though dispensaries were illegal. And he is prosecuting people in the county, specifically Roger Mensch of the Emporium, for selling marijuana to medical marijuana patients with medical marijuana cards. I don't see how we as a community here should tolerate this. People should be outside Lee's office, picketing him, banging on his door, ringing his phone, and if necessary, recalling his ass. There is no justification for what he is doing whatsoever. And he doesn't really provide one. He kind of smiles at you and says, well, there's some profiteering going on. And I say, well, what standard do you have? And he doesn't have a standard other than, oh, his own son turned him in. Well, you know, I don't know what kind of family problems the Menches have, but I know that with the standard according to what the prosecutor is going after Roger Mensch for felony transportation, cultivation, and sales of marijuana, for the second time, mind you, has said specifically that no dispensaries are legal, including Greenway and Ken Sampson's dispensary. So that's the standard they're using. And it's a standard that I don't think comports with our sense of what is appropriate here in Santa Cruz and what we voted for in 1993 with Measure A, in 1996 with Proposition 215, and when we voted in Bob Lee, or if those of us who did vote for Bob Lee, I don't even remember if I voted for Bob Lee. I don't think I did. In fact, I don't think I did. But he made a grand figure shaking everybody's hand as he walked around. Anyway, I'm hopefully about to receive a call from L.A. Can, Los Angeles Community Action Network. The guy who's about to call in is Joe Thomas, if my information is correct. And I'm going to go now to the last report that I was able to read about what they're doing down there. And then I'm going to look on laindybay.org and see what I can find. I may not be able to find anything. It looks a little uncertain. In case you want to call in to the show, if you have any questions or comments about this issue, there is a call-in number, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Boy, the computer is more sluggish than I've ever seen it. Interesting. That's strange. So that's a number you can call to get into the studio. And while we're waiting for the flood of calls and possibly from our first guest, let's turn to a couple of interviews on the street. This first interview is a couple of brief interviews, actually, from some old-timers. Here's a fellow that was around when the Coral Street Open Air Shelter was in business. That's the actual only time that Santa Cruz has actually had a legal campground for homeless people. It was on the so-called Back 40, where I guess Page Smith Community House now sits. If those of you who are familiar with homeless services, if you're not, it's at Highway 1, where Highway 1 meets Highway 9, and it was right behind the old River Street mini shelter, and it was serviced a lot of people until it was closed down by Kennedy and Rotkin and sold out by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, headed by Paul Fotenhauer and Paul Lee, who, although otherwise in many respects good Samaritans who have been struggling with homeless services, backstabbed the the homeless group that was negotiating with them, a group called Save Our Shelters, SOS, and forced them to leave under threat of arrest, even though they were under no obligation to do so other than city pressure, and they could have stood their ground. So here's an interview or two. Here's one from Squirrel, and then another interview from a man on the street that I've known for a decade, and perhaps you have too.
Man on a bike, your name, sir?
My name is Brian, but my nickname is Squirrel.
And Squirrel, you're a man who we remember from the old days at Coral Street Open Air Shelter or Camp Paradise.
Yeah, it was nice for a little while, but then it got bad.
Now, what do you think of the idea of a campground in Santa Cruz for homeless people to live in, or a number of them?
Well, if they can keep it relatively drug-free and clean, it's a good idea. But if it gets as bad as the other place, then it wouldn't be so good.
Coral Street, you mean?
Yeah.
Did you like it when they closed down Coral Street, or did you just feel that it had a lot of problems?
Weren't
you one of the River Street refugees?
I had to go from campground to campground. I'm the one that got the disabled passes and showed everybody where the office was to get them. It took me hours. I kept riding by it and not seeing it, then I'd ride back. And finally I realized I kept passing it.
Now, are you originally from Santa Cruz?
Well, no. I was born in North Carolina, and my dad was in the military, so we moved around a lot. My sister was born in Japan, so I stuck Made in Japan stickers on her and told her friends she was a cheap import.
When did you come to Santa Cruz?
1987 or 86.
Were you housed at that time or homeless?
Yeah, I was in a group home at the time.
And did you get housing after that?
Yeah, but it didn't last very long. I wound up being homeless pretty quick after a few years.
Are you homeless now?
At the moment, I'm legally homeless, but I am currently purchasing a motorhome that I don't know that runs or not, because it's better than living in a tent and paying to live on the property.
I'd ask you more, but we're both getting wet. Thank you again. We've been talking with Brian or Squirrel.
Brian, yeah, Squirrel.
Talking with
Alan Shuval. Last night, the police off Dakota Avenue and May Avenue were trying to jack me up, pulling their pistols on me and being very belligerent and rough, roughing me up. And they took me down and they injured my left arm, my hands and wrists, and my left knee.
Mm-hmm. Were you arrested or cited or just injured?
I was arrested.
For the crime of, supposedly?
Of resisting arrest.
They had no other charge?
No other charge.
And what time of night was it?
About 9 p.m.
And how many officers were involved?
About 10.
And do you remember any of the dialogue that you had with these officers?
They kept asking me a bunch of irrational questions, things that didn't hold any water and stuff, that they were afraid I might have a potential lawsuit against them.
What kind
of
questions?
Their police etiquette was out of order.
You remember, what did they object to that you were doing?
Did the officer take me down or did you lay down? And I laid down, okay? And they injured me deliberately. And I got bruises on my wrists like I got carpal tunnel syndrome or something, you know? So I think I do have a potential lawsuit against him. And the arresting officer, his name is, I'll give you his name.
Okay.
Voicemail, too.
We're standing out here in the rain in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz. Our table is covered with a red plastic sheet as we hope the rain will ease.
Officer Poe Gunter.
And is this a SCPD guy?
P-O, capital G-U-N-T-E-R, Poe Gunter.
Okay.
He's PD. SCPD.
Now, are you often outside, Alan, or are you indoors?
I am outdoors all the time.
And have you been hassled by police in any other time in the last month?
Yes, they've stolen my sleeping bag and stuff and ransacked my camp and went through the place like they were driving a truck through my living room.
And did this happen? Was it camp in the Poganip, camp somewhere else? You don't have to be terribly specific, but more or less.
I'm allowed to steal your property, from what I understand.
That's correct.
Okay.
You shouldn't be. Now, was this in a Parks and Rec area or in a downtown area?
This was in an area aside from all that. It was a public bike path off of... What is it? It's off of Ocean Street,
okay.
Near Dakota and May, which is where I camp, near that Paseo.
And did you...
I've been there for many years.
And were you camping alone or in company?
I was alone.
And what do you intend to do tonight? How are you going to deal with the rain that's coming up?
Well, I do happen to have another sleeping bag I was able to acquire, And I was standing on the Paseo when they accosted me last night, very belligerently.
The Paseo, again, is, what is the Paseo?
The bike path against the creek there.
Okay, now...
I was not in my camp, actually.
Let me ask you another question, Alan, because we've been hearing reports of violence against women. Have you heard any actual, not just newspaper shit, but stuff from ordinary people about, did anybody you know, have they been assaulted recently, other than by police? You know,
the police were using that as a scapegoat with me, trying to take my picture with a camera, aside from booking, okay? And they were trying to construe me with those assaults in Harvey West. Absolutely. If I would not let them take my picture, I kept my head turned and stayed out of their way. Best I could. They kept trying to get a picture in, but I would not cooperate with them. They put me in like a mental health room last night, you know, because I guess they couldn't...
Find a charge?
No, because they couldn't put me in with the other people. I was too outraged. So I sat there in a place for myself. They wouldn't give me a chair, and they kept saying, well, I'm not a nice enough guy, ask him, or something like that, you know? So they wouldn't even give me a chair to sit down in, all right?
In the jail?
In the jail, yeah.
Well, Alan, thank you. I'd talk to you more, but again, my hair is getting wet, but thank you very much.
Paul Gunter, Officer Paul Gunter.
Thank you, Alan.
Somebody...
Well, it's Wednesday, the, 4th of April. I'm at the courthouse here in the parking lot at the end of a brief and tiny Huff meeting talking with...
Brian.
And Brian, you're here on other court business, but you reported that this morning you were in your vehicle and a police officer came up to you about 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, he knocked on my vehicle. I was in the back doing leather work, sitting in my office chair of my van, and he said that I was camping there. And I informed him that I was not camping, that I was doing leather work, and that I was not sleeping there, and any bedding that I got or whatnot is full of bicycles, so I couldn't have been preparing to sleep in it anyway, otherwise I wouldn't move the bikes.
Did you ask the officer her his name?
Yeah, I started to. I said, can I get your name and stuff? Yeah, you know, because you said I talked to you before, and, you know, I don't believe I have. Can I get your name again? And he's like, well, I'll just write you a ticket for illegal camping. And I said, well, why don't you go ahead then so I can get your name and stuff? And he goes, you got 1 minute to move your car.
So, did you move your car?
Yeah, of course. I have to follow a lawful policeman's orders.
That's not a lawful order.
It's not?
No. Huh. If you're legally parked, you don't have to move your car.
Well, you tow it.
I understand. He was an armed individual intimidating you with a weapon in the sense that he had it nearby.
Here's another good one.
Wait, and he also declined to identify who he was?
Basically. He didn't say no. He just didn't answer my question.
In fact, you're allowed to stay up all night in your vehicle.
Sure.
You're allowed to lie down in your vehicle. You're allowed to hang out near your vehicle all night, but you're not allowed to sleep in your vehicle.
Right.
Sleeping is illegal after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning under the bizarre Santa Cruz sleeping ban. Yes, you can sleep during the day. At least that's the excuse that Judge Thomas Kangaroo Kelly gave here at the court in 1997 for not finding the whole law unconstitutional.
Oh, I see. I see how it is.
So you say any further encounters with the police around the issue of sleeping? Or?
Watch this one. I was parked at the now-defunct location of the SPCA here in Santa Cruz.
Which is where?
On 7th Avenue off from SoCal in Santa Cruz. And I was parked there. There are several other abandoned vehicles sitting there that have been there forever, tagged for towing. Mine's registered, insured, licensed, blah, blah, blah. And I was told that I could not park there. I said, cool, no problem. I'll move over here to a city parking space. And he goes, well, you got to move every 2 hours or 72 hours. I said, well, I plan on moving within 2 hours, so that's not a problem, you know. And so anyway,
police officer who talked to you?
County officer, yeah.
Deputy.
And so the deputy, I said, well, I'm just going to move it right over there then. And he goes, that's fine. You know, I got no problem with it. That's legal. So anyway, I go over there and I'm reading my Bible, and I fall asleep during the day within an hour and then a female deputy.
Deputy or Santa Cruz?
Deputy. Tells me that I cannot park my car in a residential area. In a residential area. And I said, that's bull. This is a legal parking spot. And she basically intimidated me with towing my car again. And anyway, so I didn't argue.
How long ago was this?
2 weeks ago.
The first incident was this morning?
The first one that I talked about was this morning, yes. And then the night before last night, I have a car and a van.
Uh-huh.
My van had an electrical problem, and the owner and his son and his wife were nice enough to push me into their business establishment, mm-hmm. which just happened to be a foreign auto repair shop. Mm-hmm. And mine being domestic, they weren't able to help me due to principle, mm-hmm. basically. But they did say, you know, I explained to them what was going on, that, you know, basically I'm poor, but I'm going to go out and hustle up some money, get a tester, and, you know, see what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go get my car, blah, 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 and I'll take care of it as soon as possible. And I said, no problem. Glad you're not on the highway, you know, and stuck there. And they said, but we would like you to have it moved by Monday. And this was Friday, I believe. So Sunday night, either Saturday or Sunday, I am working desperately trying to install a, alternator,
mm-hmm.
and test my old one and such. And the same deputy that told me I couldn't fall asleep in my car in a public
female deputy?
Female deputy told me that I had no business being on a private property this time. Before I couldn't park on public property. Now this time I'm on private property with permission of the owners,
mm-hmm.
and to be there until Monday, at, you know, to have my stuff off by Monday. I'm trying my best to comply and be a man of my word.
And so, what time?
She ordered me to stop working on my vehicles, called me and the owner a liar about the owner would not do that, and and that she stopped because I was on private property. And I said, let me guess, you got a call. And I said, no, wait a minute, no, you didn't. And she said, basically, I don't need a call. I can do anything I want. You're on private property.
Did you get her name?
No, but I'm.
Try to notice the nameplates of these folks.
I know who her boss is. It's Sergeant Morales, so he'll know.
What did she look like? Describe her.
She's about my height, about 5'8", maybe 140, dark brown hair, medium length, kind of a round face, maybe American Indian or of Latin descent. I don't know. Maybe Hawaiian. I don't know. Maybe Caucasian with a nice tan. I don't know.
And did you then move?
Yeah, she basically ordered me away from my vehicles. You know, and I'm disabled. My medications are in there. I was out there without a coat.
What time was this?
1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. I wanted out of there by the morning so that I could, you know, be a man of my word.
Were you causing, making noise, or was this in a residential area?
No, this was a commercial area. Before she told me I couldn't park in a public residential area, now I'm in a private commercial area, and she said I couldn't be there either.
Now, how long after this was a couple nights ago,
yeah.
and that was several weeks after your first encounter with her.
Right. And now I've got the police, the city guys, basically telling me the same thing. And I think a lot of it has to do with me taking some of the bullshit stuff to trial.
You are, in fact, being charged with various crimes of possession of methamphetamine, needles?
Not possession. Suspicion of, you know, it's just hearsay and outright lies, basically.
What's the charge?
I'd really rather not go into that because that's between me and my attorney and the judge. It's public record if anybody wants to go look it up.
Right. The reason I ask you is, if you're candid about this, it makes your previous account more credible. And since you are going public with it.
It has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
These are two separate things.
Well, obviously, the police...
Harassment. It's just harassment due to...
If you're being tried for molesting three children and, engaging in, blowing up a building, police may not want you in the area. They may be trying to use extra-legal kind of methods, but... If it's simply a matter of, a violation of the drug laws, that's something else.
It's a matter of parking. For instance, one which was dismissed was possession of an opium pipe. It was not an opium pipe. It was a marijuana pipe. Mm-hmm. So there's your hearsay and outright lies.
Did this happen? I'm going to ask you more questions you can refuse to answer because sure. I know you're going to trial. But did this police contact where the so-called opium pipe or marijuana pipe, if you will, whatever it was ascertained, was run across by police. How did that... Were you in a public place or in a private place?
I was in a private parking lot doing leather work again when the deputies rolled up on me and...
Not at 1 o'clock in the morning?
No, this was 3 o'clock in the morning.
I see. 2 hours later.
Yeah, a whole different separate issue. And from what I understand, they got no call. They just decided to... check me out.
Where were you? What, downtown Santa Cruz?
No, Edmunds Bakery parking lot, which I've been going to for 7 years, and I've never had a problem, a complaint. I've never been asked to leave. I've never had any contact with them.
At what stage are the proceedings in court for those who want to be supportive of you? Is there a hearing people should come to? Or?
No. Well, if they want to, they should go to all hearings.
What's the next hearing that people can be supportive at?
Look on the calendars.
They don't know your name.
Huh? That's okay.
You don't want people to come to this hearing?
No, I don't care. They're entitled to any public court.
No, what I'm saying is people I'm talking to on the air are not going to know how to deal with this.
I don't need a moral support from anybody.
Okay. Well,
I have the law on mine.
Well, I wish you luck, man, because I think it's a matter of public concern, because I suspect it's happening not just to you, but to others as well.
Well, with this harassment, about the parking and stuff, right now at this point in time, it's my word against theirs.
I understand.
So it could be flipped around as my hearsay, but I will be filing.
And probably will be flipped around, for that matter, given the way the courts are. Anyway, thank you. We've been talking with...
We'll be filing grievances with the county and the city police officers, which will go to internal affairs.
Which will go into the circular file. Still, they will be available.
Special standards.
They will be available for pitches motions, so that's good.
Yeah, well, they're required by law to keep them on record for 5 years.
Correct.
So if it does end up in file 13, there's a violation of their own rules and such.
We've been talking with
Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, that was a recent interview a week or two ago outside the courthouse. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, and also www.freakradio.org is where we're streaming. My guest from LA Can is not called in, but never fear. Another guest is perhaps more reliably going to call in, at least he has pretty regularly in the past. That's Mike Rhodes from Fresno. Mike is an activist who, along with a bunch of attorneys, has been responsible for, making some significant changes in how the Fresno police deal with the homeless community there. He's recently won a real victory. An apparent real victory by getting Mayor Autry, who, when I asked him whether he was going to put in some porta potties and dumpsters at the homeless encampment in Fresno, and there are thousands of homeless people there in the Fresno area, he told us he couldn't do that because it was unsafe to put in porta potties and dumpsters and would only encourage drug use and prostitution. Completely absurd. The kind of arguments you probably heard at the Salinas City Council meeting about medical marijuana on another front. I mean, the kinds of parallels and bizarre arguments that are used against the most obvious, simple reforms are amazing. But apparently sell in some quarters. Anyway, Rhodes and his group in Fresno, or his groups, a coalition of groups, was able to change this and pressure the mayor through the city council to, in fact, not only put in dumpsters and porta potties, although that actually hasn't been done yet. We'll hear if that's been done when Mike calls in. But claim that in 45 to 60 days they will have a safe sleeping zone, or a free zone, as they call it, for homeless people established with facilities and other amenities. whether that this is going to actually deal with the 1,000 or 2,000 or how many thousand that are in the Fresno area, I don't know. And I've advised Mike to be careful about this because they like to promise things that they don't come through with. But even getting him to the point of making that promise is a very significant fact. And a lot of this happened around the, as a consequence, I think, both of the federal lawsuit, the so-called Kincaid decision in Fresno, which forced the cleanup crews, the police, the city authorities generally to stop destroying homeless property, instead store it. If they want to clear an area and confiscate homeless property, they have to store it, which sounds like a sort of a elementary deal. But you should be aware that in Santa Cruz, Ranger Wallace does not order homeless property stored when he rips up tents in the Poganip and despoils campsites and sends in the labor-ready crews. They simply throw it into a dump truck and dump it. So they are, of course, in need of a lawsuit here as well. I should say we are, just as we're in need of a lawsuit to enforce the kind of Jones decision ruling that now is the law in Los Angeles, that is the practice in San Diego because of the settlement with the homeless, and is the actual municipal law in Richmond. You don't arrest homeless people unless you have places to send them for sleeping. I'm not saying this is a terribly wonderful solution when it's done, but it beats arresting them whenever the hell you want. Since it's unlikely that cities are going to be able to find accommodations for homeless people, given the fact that they're more interested in catering to the rich and throwing the lion's share of their resources that direction, then it's unlikely that they'll have these resources for the homeless, and therefore homeless people, if this decision is upheld, and if we hold city authorities to this line, this standard, that they will have to stop harassing homeless people for doing what they need to do, sleep at night, shelter themselves at night against the rain and the cold to survive. So I'm going to go online, and I'm looking at the story Fresno Takes a Step Forward by Mike Rhodes. And there's a picture of Mayor Autry giving a speech. And there's even a little press clip, a video that you can go to. And that's at www.indiebay.org/Central Valley. And then look for, on the extreme right, the story Fresno Takes a Step Forward. I'll read it. Fresno Mayor Alan Autry announced today that the city of Fresno, in a joint project with the county, will set up a homeless center in the downtown area. The center would provide this community's large homeless population a place to put up a tent. There will be portable toilets, trash bins, and a facility, probably a trailer, where homeless people can get information about social services like job training, employment, etc. The mayor said the homeless would be able to set up their own tents on the property where they can live with dignity and respect. The press conference came after the Fresno City Council last week asked the city manager's office to install portable toilets and trash bins for the homeless at their current campsites, which are sort of under freeways and so forth. City manager Andrew Souza said he would not follow the council's direction, even after a 5-2 vote supported the action. The agenda item was about to come up again 4 days ago, when City Council member Jerry Duncan announced that an agreement had been reached with the mayor's office and that a joint press conference would be held to announce the details. The plan announced at the press conference goes significantly beyond the scope of the proposal before the City Council for dumpsters and porta-potties. While the location for this free zone has not been chosen, it is a demand that the city's homeless have raised repeatedly in many cities, I might add. The city's policy has been to sweep the homeless from one spot to another, saying they should move into the Rescue Mission or the Poverello House, two homeless agencies in the downtown Fresno area. With official city documents showing that Fresno has over 8,000 homeless people, the less than 200 beds in these two homeless shelters was thought by many to be inadequate. The mayor said the plan was to have the new homeless facility set up and running within 45 to 60 days. He challenged those at the press conference to hold him to the time frame. Autry, Duncan, and others that spoke made it clear they did not see this as a solution to homelessness, rather as a better alternative to what they've been doing. Duncan said it was a step forward. The Fresno County Board of Supervisor President Bob Waterston said a task force would be formed to develop this plan. Autry said the group would be made up of representatives from the city, county, Poverello House, the Rescue Mission, and the homeless themselves. Jim Connell, executive director of the Poverello House, speaking at the press conference, said the project will provide a somewhat better life for the people that are in the tent city now. But please remember, this is step one, only step one, and part of what the task force is going to do is look for the longer-term solutions. After the press conference, the issue was brought up again at the city council meeting. Andrew Souza said it was their intent to have the project up and running in 45 to 60 days and added that they still wanted to work on short-term solutions to the health and safety concerns in the homeless encampments. In other words, maybe a porta potty or two while they're waiting for this to find a location for their own tent city, since homeless people have their own location. You sleep where you happen to be if that's what you've got. It'd be nice to have a dumpster or a place to take a dump nearby. That could mean portable toilets and trash bins will be set up near some downtown homeless encampments. The day's events brought the city of Fresno and the county of Fresno together to look at developing a common strategy on homelessness in this community. Almost everyone agrees that no one government entity can solve homelessness on their own. Councilmember Duncan said he hopes that bringing the city and county together and building a task force on homelessness will lead to this community's ability to bring more resources here to address this issue. And there's a really interesting background on the whole struggle to take these clowns to court, to put them in the position where they now actually have to respond. On this website, again, it's indiebay.org/Central Valley, and then just look for articles by Mike Rhodes on the extreme right of the screen. I may have read this before, and if I have at an earlier stage, an earlier show, I apologize if you have to listen to it again, but it is encouraging, although I think Mike is too optimistic. I told him this on the phone when I spoke to him a few days ago, but we'll see if he's gotten some porta-potties and dumpsters installed. It doesn't take a long time to install porta-potties. This was a press conference on Tuesday the 17th, 2 days ago, so by this time they should be able to roll a couple porta-potties out to these places if they're serious. And ditto with the dumpsters. We tried to get them to do that at Camp Paradise. Not only that's the campground that the homeless people formed here in Santa Cruz in 2001. Not only wouldn't they do that, but they banned porta-potty companies from even putting in a porta-potty that was paid for by the community on the city property. So people had to continue, taking a dump in the river or trying to go dig a hole somewhere or going to a neighbor's house or crapping in a pot and disposing of the refuse in some field somewhere, whatever the method of the moment was. That was under Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, as I remember, with Kennedy and Primack playing the Liberals, interestingly enough, though. Not so liberal that they set up an alternate campsite once that one was washed away in the winter of 2001-2002. Here's some stuff from Fresno that I found of interest. I was in Fresno for the Homelessness Marathon, which you can find online. You Google for Homelessness Marathon. Every year, Jeremy Alderson has done this 14-hour nonstop, back-to-back, nationwide marathon for homelessness where it's not an attempt to raise money, but to raise awareness. And he has homeless people talking about what's going on, homeless artists, homeless musicians, homeless activists, and they cover particular aspects of the homeless situation. Each year it's in a different city. I think next year it's going to be in San Francisco. This year it was in Fresno because of this court decision, the Kincaid decision, which said no more ranger Wallacing around. You can't just move in and destroy property because you think homeless people aren't worth a shit and you want to clean up the environment by removing the people and all their property without providing any alternatives or basic respect for their rights. The Kincaid decision found this, and because of that, Fresno kind of became a focus, so Jeremy brought the homeless marathon there. I went there with Becky Johnson. We did some recording, and here's some of what we got.
Okay, so it's about 15 to 4 on February 20th, 2007. We're talking with
Rebecca,
Lori,
and William,
and I'm Robert, and we're here as the setup is about to start. I guess, well, not about to start, 15 minutes until national broadcast time. I guess you're on the first panel, all three of you, or?
Yeah. Yep.
All right, and you're plaintiffs in the lawsuit. Again, your full name?
William Bailey.
Lori Bailey.
Rebecca Huffman.
And how did you get involved in this lawsuit? Did some sleazy lawyer come down and try to get you to join up with this? How did you get tricked into fighting your own city of Fresno?
Well, we came back from being having to work and then ended up homeless again. And then we heard about the Dream Team lawyers and what they were trying to do for the people of Fresno and the homeless people. So we went down and checked it out, and then we put our name on the petition for them throwing our stuff away also.
How many people are actually involved in signing up on that petition, do you know?
I'm not exactly sure, but there's more homeless people out there that are kind of too afraid to get involved with it because they've been harassed by the police department.
Have you been harassed as a consequence of doing this?
No, not so far.
Neither.
No.
In fact, it's often the case that if you're on a lawsuit like this, they're more likely to leave you alone for fear that they will be singled out and spotlight put on those who harass you.
Oh, but you know what? I beg your pardon. I take that back. We were kind of harassed a little bit, but not so much talked to. They came in through our camp this last time, last Friday, and threw our mattress away.
This is the cleanup that actually was mostly a real cleanup? Or?
No, because if it was a real cleanup, they would have took the trash from the other side of the hill from us, because there is trash pile that's like 4.5 feet tall.
What did they do during this Friday incident?
They came through our camp, and all they did was take things from around our camp. You can see the tire tracks and everything that go in and out.
Stuff that people regarded as mostly trash or mostly not trash?
Not trash.
So they again violated the injunction?
Yes.
Your camp was at?
California and D Street.
And the time of this was approximately?
In the afternoon sometime.
And today is Tuesday, so that would have been today's Tuesday, the 20th, 19th, 18th, 17th, the 16th, the Friday.
Yep.
Years after. Anything you want to say to the Santa Cruz folks? I'll be playing this tape on either Thursday or Saturday. I mean Sunday. Anything you want to say to the folks down the way?
Hopefully nobody else has to endure or go through anything else that the city of Fresno has put the people here through. And God bless the Dream Team, and God bless everybody helping everybody.
Yep.
Take care.
Thank you.
Sure. I actually got a last question for you before you go. What is, you may have heard about Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, where people formed their own camp and began, homeless people got together and formed their own encampment. Have you been a part of larger encampments here that have been successful in terms of people helping each other, or is it pretty much
everyone for themselves? Everybody for themselves. We've offered to take in a guy in another tent in our camp, and it just seemed to be chaos. He was stealing stuff from us, and he was bringing people in and out 24/7. There was alcohol, there was drugs, and we try to keep a drug-free environment where we are because there's a youngster around.
How old is this youngster?
19.
Well, over the age of consent.
He's a baby.
I'll keep my hands to myself. Thank you very much, all of you.
Thank you.
All right. We're talking with?
Esther.
Last name?
Sanders.
And Esther, you can you confirm that you've seen police in the last week or two actually taking property that would be useful to a person in a camp that was their personal property?
Yeah.
Without making a record of it or categorizing it?
Without making a record of it, without categorizing it, without doing nothing to it.
What did you see actually done?
They've taken, come in, and if they don't see anybody there, they'll pick up certain things and, you know, sometimes tents, sometimes clothes, and they'll just throw them away. And I don't think it's right.
And what have you seen most recently? What's the most recent example of this?
Recently, lately here, I haven't seen anything yet.
I mean, for example, did you see anything on Friday happen? Last Friday?
Friday, I didn't see anything for Friday at all.
So would you say that since the beginning of the year, you haven't seen this happen?
Since I've been around them, I haven't seen them come back over there and do anything. They've been pretty much laying back.
Have you heard that they've done any kind of expedition since the injunction?
I've heard about it, and I don't know how often they've been doing it, but I have heard that they have been doing it here and there.
But you haven't actually seen it.
I haven't really been seeing it yet. I'm just waiting to see it.
Thank you. We're talking with
Esther.
Thanks, Esther. talking with.
Yeah, my name is Anthony. Just have to say my name, Anthony Arano, and I'm a homeless. And I would like to see the city of Fresno realize that, you know, the city of Fresno is growing to be a big population, and they have
500,000 more or less.
Yes. And they got to face that issue that, you know, they have to do something about the homeless population, because as the city grows, also the homeless population also grows, and they've been keeping this the homeless population away from everything else, you know, like keeping them out of the way for everything they want to do, but they're allowing the city to get bigger and bigger.
How many people do you estimate are homeless in Fresno?
I say anywhere between I say about 50 to 100,000 people all over Fresno. Not only in the rescue mission, there's some scattered everywhere in the city of Fresno.
I
mean, you know,
that's true. That's 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 10 people. That's a much larger figure than most people would estimate. I would say, I mean, the city probably estimates maybe a couple thousand. You're saying more like tens of thousands?
Yes, because if you notice down by Herndon area, all that area is expanding, and everywhere else is expanding in Fresno. You know, and jobs are not there anymore.
Yeah, it looks like Rhodes' estimate, Michael Rhodes' estimate, is 8,000, according to his article at IndyBay.org.
You know, people are becoming families, you know, are becoming homeless with children.
How long have you been homeless? Or houseless?
I've been homeless for about a year and a half.
And I've been asking this question of a number of people. Has your tent been destroyed or any of your property taken by the police or by the public works?
At one time, when I was living at the bridge at the hill, which you might call it, yes, they did. They went in there. The police, Larry Arson, I guess, the guy who runs the mission, rescue mission, allowed his people to come in and destroy our personal property and threw it away. Okay, but through the help of some other people that support the homeless people, we got all of our merchandise back through them.
When was this?
This was about a year ago.
So that was, is that unusual? Do you people usually not get their property back, or are they usually able to get their property back?
Usually they're not, because what they do is they take the merchandise and destroy it. Okay, the only things that we have that we own, okay, they come in and take it and destroy it. And I don't think they have a right to do that. You know what I mean? I mean, this is all we have. What do they want more? You know.
Since the injunction in December that these attorneys got, the Dream Team, have you suffered any police harassment since then? Or have you heard of anybody who's had their property taken? The last couple months.
Yeah, the police has been really good about it ever since that injunction, I guess, what happened, you know, with that. And they've been getting out of people's way. They got to do their job also, you know. And we respect them for what they're doing. But they also got to understand that, you know, we don't have nowhere else to go. This is the only place we live, you know, to be a little bit not so hard on us, you know, because, you know, we're trying hard. All we're asking from the community is to give us jobs and a decent place to live. That's all we're asking.
Last time you had a job was doing what?
I was doing truck manufacturing.
How long ago?
That was about a year and a half ago. So,
I'm Robert.
Yeah, I was doing a truck manufacturing for some company and about a year and a half ago, and I was doing good, and then I got disabled. I got hurt in the job, and I was put out on the street, and it's not a place, you know, that anybody can just live off and get back in a regular society like that, you know.
What's the death rate in Fresno the last year on the street? Do you have any sense of that? Was there a count made, or was there a... In Santa Cruz, we have a memorial every year for the people who've died in the county. Does anything like that happen in Fresno? Do you have any sense of how many people died last year?
I know last year during the summertime, there must have been about, I'd say about 4 or 5 died from heat strokes, from lack of water. And the mission, they only put water out there a certain amount of time, and then after that they take it away from there. So a lot of people go thirsty with water, so they don't have water, and that heat was blaring last year, and a lot of, and that I know 4 people died last year.
How about the temperature in the winter? Has it been pretty cold, or how's the weather been here?
It's been freezing cold in the morning, you know, especially when it rains. After it rains and it gets cold, we've had to do bonfires out there to stay warm, you know, and have a lot of blankets to survive out there. Otherwise it is very cold.
And the fire department with a hose to hose down your fires?
No, they've been pretty good at that. They know our situations, you know, but they don't go out. That I know of, they haven't gone out there and done that.
Violence against women outdoors. You're not a woman, of course, and I probably should be talking to the women about this, but or violence, is violence in the homeless situation mostly homeless on homeless? Is it mostly housed on homeless? Is it mostly police on homeless? Is it a mixture? What's your feeling?
Well, It varies. I mean, I've seen homeless on homeless. I've seen others on homeless, like regular society and the homeless people. You know, they drive by and throw cans at us or bottles of beer and stuff, you know, at us like that. You know what I mean? And I feel that they're wrong about that because they have no idea in our situations why we're out here. You know, some people are out here for all the wrong reasons. Some people are out here because society has put us out here. You know, and all we're looking is for a chance to come up and get a life back again, you know.
And in Santa Cruz, we have a thing called the sleeping ban and the camping ban and the blanket ban, which is used to ticket up to about 60 homeless people per month for falling asleep after 11 o'clock at night or covering up with a blanket or being in a tent, even though there's no shelter. What's the shelter situation in Fresno is what? How many spaces are there, as far as you know, for people per night?
Okay, the rescue mission has a shelter for men, and the Paparilla House has a rescue for women. That I know of, the rescue mission, there's one thing that you have to comply to go inside and sleep. You have to sit there for an hour and a half and listen to the word that they preach to you. You know, so
what
you don't
know the word is that.
Well, it's Christian, but it's, you know, some people are Catholic, some people are UPC and all, you know, other religions, and we are forced to listen to the word there in order for us to stay there. So, you know, I think if somebody goes out to another church, one of their own churches, and they want to come back, they will not allow us to go back inside and sleep, so we have to stay on the street.
So, in Santa Cruz, we have these laws that make it illegal to sleep, and people get arrested under it. There's a crackdown happening in Santa Cruz on people who are downtown. If they're sitting in the wrong place, they are getting ticketed. If they are driving a bicycle the wrong way, they're getting ticketed. If they're sitting on the edge of a little planter, they get ticketed. If they're panhandling, even peacefully, they can get ticketed if they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's illegal, for example, to even ask for anything at night, or even with silently with a sign in Santa Cruz. Do you have a lot of people who are forced into the court system because of a bunch of laws that essentially criminalize you for doing stuff that would otherwise be, that doesn't hurt anybody else, but that is considered unsightly or related to the homeless, so they don't want you around? What's the situation in the courts for you and people you know?
Well, I know that they cite people for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, but you know I see it this way: how can they cite the homeless when we're just barely making it? How much money does the court system expect to get from us?
It's not reasonable, but does it actually happen much?
It happens once in a while. You know, they're being a little bit more lenient because they know that we can't pay those bills, but there's some officers that do carry their authority up and beyond certain levels, you know, and they do cite people just to
cite. Have you gotten any citations yourself?
I've gotten one for riding supposedly on the wrong side of the road.
Bad boy.
Yes, I know.
Now, you're also a Spanish-speaking person.
Yes, I am.
What percentage of homeless people would you say are either bilingual or simply Spanish-speaking?
I'd say about 75%.
Most people here speak Spanish or bilingual.
Yes, bilingual.
We're not represented here in this homelessness marathon. We've got a bunch of honkies, and you look like the only person who speaks Spanish here.
Yeah. What the problem is the Hispanic people. They're so. How do you say? They don't like to get involved into any activities like this because they've already gotten threats from police or whatever, and every time they go to certain reunions like this, they get attacked. So they kind of get hesitant about coming to certain things.
Last May 1st in Santa Cruz, there was a huge rally against the immigration laws that criminalize mostly people from Mexico and Central and Latin America. We had 3,000 to 5,000 people marching, and there were huge rallies in Los Angeles. I imagine there was a big rally here in Fresno, too.
I believe so. Yeah, there was a huge rally for the immigration status for the Mexican people.
So people will come out and stand up for their rights under some circumstance.
Yeah, but the majority of that people is like people that are educated, that are going to school, you know, that are out there in the community, you know, that they have self-esteem. You know, a lot of the homeless out here don't have that kind of self-esteem to go out into the public, you know, and it takes a lot out of them to come over here and do something like that, you know what I mean? But the Hispanic people that showed up is because those people are professional people or or they have their own homes that they live in, and they can come out and do something like that out here.
Is there much division between those who speak Spanish and those who don't? Are people, do people kind of stay away from each other? Are they suspicious of each other? Or do they say, we're both homeless, we're both in the same situation? What is the situation here?
Well, the way I see things is that now it doesn't matter who you are. You can be black, white, Mexican, you know. It's all about coming together, you know, and helping each other out here, you know, because this is all we have out here. You know, the city doesn't help us out. You know, there's other organizations that do help us out, but we got to come together.
And is that happening, you think?
I believe so. I think people are coming more together nowadays.
How long have you been in Fresno?
I've been in Fresno for the last 3 years, 4 years.
And so you see this, it's more so than 3 years ago, less so? What's your feeling?
It's more so than 3 years, yeah. I mean, there's a lot less violence than it was here at the Mission here at G Street in Ventura. There's a lot less violence because of the unity coming together, interacting with another race, you know, coming to bring peace because, you know, we can't kill each other out here, you know what I mean? And we got to make peace with each other and brotherhood and fellowship.
Any recruiting efforts by the military among the homeless? I mean, after all, you can get good jobs over in Iraq.
I haven't seen none of that yet, you know, and that, I mean, I'm sure that some people are willing to put some time up there for that, you know.
Is there much anti-war sentiment here among the homeless?
I'm sure a lot of the people do have families out there, and they don't want no wars, they want peace, you know, and I'm sure that eventually, hopefully, we pray that one day we will stop, you know, and people can have their family members back home, and so on.
We've been talking with
Anthony Arano.
Anthony, anything else you want to say?
I just wish that that the city of Fresno would help us out with finding jobs, you know, in a shelter to be. That's all we're asking, you know. I don't think it's very much, you know, to ask to get us in a program to help us find a job, to give us an opportunity and open doors so we can get our lives back together. That's all I ask.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that was Anthony Arano in Fresno on, what was it? March or February 20th, they slip away. On the line with me is Mike Rhodes, I hope. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Robert.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
The question is, can we hear you? Talk a little louder.
Okay, I'll try.
All right, that sounds okay. I'm turning it up a bit here and hoping all is well. So, Mike, you've been listening to the show on the internet, because we stream at www.freakradio.org. How long have you been listening for?
About the last 15 minutes or so.
Because before that, we read your story on indiebay.org about there being a major victory around Mayor Autry and his no dumpsters, but now suddenly they're going to lavish heavenly gifts upon you, free zones, perhaps a tropical fruit. Who knows what's coming down the pike? So
the fear is here, Robert, is that it's going to be so good that people are going to be leaving their jobs to down in the homeless shelters that they're setting up and living out on the street. Some city council members have already expressed their concern that will be, you know, such a mecca for homeless people that, you know, we're just going to exacerbate the problem.
You're already starting a caravan here in Santa Cruz to send buses to avail ourselves of the dumpsters and porta potties, since can't seem to squeeze shit out of these people over here. So what's the deal? I talked to you earlier. The plan is in 45 to 60 days to have a so-called free zone set up, but they can't decide where it is yet. What's happening with that?
Well, the way I look at this is that this is simply another step in the right direction. It's by no means a resolution to the situation here. It's simply that Fresno was treating homeless people in the most awful and barbaric way imaginable. They were literally bulldozing their possessions and immediately putting them in garbage trucks and hauling it away. We've stopped that. We've got them coming out and cleaning up some of the trash that gets built up around the encampments. And then in talking with the homeless residents in these encampments, they said, what we need is some trash bins and portable toilets. You know, what do you think? Is that possible to get the city of Fresno to provide that? And I said, I don't know, but we can talk to them about it. And so we raised that demand that they put portable toilets and trash bins out by the encampments. And what happened was that we got a couple of the city council members to agree that that would be the right thing to do. And it wasn't unanimous. There was some opposition to it. Council member Larry Westerlund, for example, argued that you can't trust people in bathrooms unless they're monitored, and that he was concerned that bad things could happen in the portable toilets out there, and it would be their fault. It would be the city's fault if anything bad happened in the portable toilets.
So what you have is perhaps a chaperone program for every homeless pee-peer?
You know, I cannot get into this guy's thought process. I don't know how he could seriously say that. It's not like people in four-star hotels don't do things in their bathrooms that he might not approve of either. But he's not talking about closing them down. He's not talking about stopping airplanes from flying because people do things in the bathrooms there. Anyway, you know, it's really a class thing, I think. I don't think it's about, it's not really about that something bad might happen in the portable toilet. They just, some people in this community and some people in power, like Westerlund, would just like to see the homeless die or go away. And to do anything to help make their life a little better, in his view, is wrong. So what happened was the city council, in a 5-2 vote about a week and a half ago, voted to put these portable toilets out there and near homeless encampments. And the city manager, who's working on behalf of the mayor of Fresno, Alan Autry, said he wouldn't do it. He said, you know, I don't care if you voted 5-2. I'm not going to put them out there. And so they had passed this resolution as a directive. It wasn't written in a way that forced the city manager's office to do this.
It was an advisory measure, right?
Yeah, that's a good word for it. It was an advisory measure. So then they said, okay, fine. You know, we wanted to work together. We were, you know, going to do this in a friendly, collegial way. But if you're going to stonewall this, then we'll pass a resolution that forces you to put them out there. And so that resolution was coming up this Tuesday, and when I got down there to see how things went, the city council member who had put it on the agenda pulled it and said that there's going to be a press conference at 1 p.m. to make a major announcement about a shift in homeless policy in the community. So that announcement was made by the mayor, who now embraced this concept of putting portable toilets and trash bins near homeless encampments and made it his own idea, because he knew he was going to lose the vote, and he would lose if he vetoed it. It would be overwritten. So he, in essence, figured out how to make a victory out of something where he would have otherwise been defeated and made to look like even more of a Grinch than he did before.
Yeah, it's amazing that Fresno, which is a much more conservative town than Santa Cruz, can muster a 5-2 majority on the city council to put in porta-potties and dumpsters for its, 8,000 homeless?
It's at least that. I think that's a low figure. It's the official city figure in their documents. They say there's over 8,000 homeless people in Fresno. And that's really based on this continuum of care study that shows that there's approximately 1% of homeless people across the United States, and they just took that number and applied it to Fresno. But the reality is that Fresno has an extraordinary high unemployment rate. The Brookings Institute found that Fresno had the highest concentration of poverty in the entire United States.
Wow. Well, I know that. I mean, it's amazing that. I imagine that the votes from poor people don't elect a lot of the council members. I imagine there's a pretty sharp class division.
Right.
And,
yeah, that's very true.
You know, in Santa Cruz, which is a much smaller community in which the so-called progressives have an actual majority on the city council, although I guess In a way, that's debatable, but people that call themselves progressives get elect votes from the university community. Mm-hmm. There's never even been a proposal to put in porta potties and toilets.
You want to know something really odd, Robert, is that the probably the most conservative member of the city council, Jerry Duncan, is the person who sponsored the proposal to put portable toilets and trash bins out for the homeless. His argument was a little different than mine, but in the end we both ended up doing the same thing. His argument was, this is terrible for business owners in the downtown area and for residents because there's trash, people use the neighborhood as a toilet, and we've got to give the small business owners and residents a reprieve from all of this, and we can do that by providing portable toilets and trash bins for the garbage.
We have to contrast this with Santa Cruz, where not only has – actually, there was one proposal when they were going to set up their own safe zone, kind of an equivalent to the free zone you're talking about. We had a city council initially took a vote on that and passed it in May of 2000, and then they were sold out by then-Mayor Catherine Byers, who turned around and voted it down in a midnight session, and a month or two later. But they never actually got porta potties or dumpsters out to where homeless people were. They've even removed in Santa Cruz all the porta potties that are used by the community because the city is too cheap to put in 24-hour bathrooms. And the one bathroom that they were talking about putting in as a kind of a self-cleaning toilet, you may have seen them if you've been to San Francisco.
Yeah.
The merchants have stopped that because they think it would look unsightly downtown.
Jesus Christ. I don't know. I really don't know why you would have progressives or people who, consider themselves to be progressive and be past these draconian anti-homeless resolutions. It doesn't make sense to me. But I find it odd that we get support from some of the most conservative people on our city council here. They've carried the ball on this.
Let me ask you this, because you've got this proposal that not only are they going to, well, it seems in a way this was a way to head off the dumpsters and porta potties vote, which would have required them to act pretty quickly. I take it that no such vote was taken by the city council. It came off the agenda, so there's no requirement that the mayor put in porta potties and dumpsters now. Is that correct?
Yeah, technically that's correct.
And in fact, I would guess no porta potties or dumpsters have appeared.
As far as I know, they haven't. And how hard could that be to put them out there if you wanted to?
It's a matter of simply sending, somebody down to the public works to move a few of them to the appropriate area. Have you talked to city council members who are in the 5-2 majority and asked them to pass an interim measure that will make sure that while the mayor preens himself in the media and talks about safe zones and free zones, there actually will be sanitary facilities in existing zones?
I haven't. I have not had that conversation with anybody on the city council. I've heard from Jerry Duncan after the press conference, and I heard the city manager, Andy Souza, say that it is their intention to put portable toilets or to take care of some of the safety and health issues before the 45 to 60 day timeline. So it may be a little early to say what's going to happen, but it's certainly something that we should talk to them about, because that's what people have said to me out on the street, is how hard could it be for them just to bring some portable toilets out and trash bins and put them up here right now? They do that for special events all the time.
Well, they've headed off your initiative. You had your city council majority together. They passed the first measure as an advisory measure. They're prepared to go back and pass it as a full measure, but now the mayor has made his promises, and so people can now hold their water and hold their shit for the next 45 days. Is that the proposal?
believe me, they won't hold it for 45 or 60 days. That ain't going to happen. I don't know. Maybe you're a little more cynical than I am, or maybe I'm too Pollyannish about this. But I think that the city's policy is changing. They're not doing it because they have had a revelation, an epiphany has struck them about this, but they're being forced to make changes whether they like it or not. And this is a move in the right direction. It's not the solution to the problem. I mean, the problems are incredibly complex. You need living wages. You need affordable housing.
But there is no move, Mike. There is talk right now. There is no move. Unless you've seen, I also suggest to you, maybe you have some deep eyes or deep throat inside the city staff that can tell you whether plans are actually moving forward. And I take it you haven't yet developed those contacts.
I haven't heard anything. There's a city friendly aide in one of the council members' office that seems to give us a lot of inside information about how things are rolling along. One of the things is that they have a task force they're developing that will oversee this.
Oh,
and
please.
One of the things that I did talk to him about is, well, we got to have homeless people on that, and we've got to have.
You know, we had a task force, too. We had several task forces. They took the place of any activity. We had a task force that paid $10,000 for that met for 6 months, came out with some excellent recommendations that were completely deep-sixed. If you go to Arcata, you'll find a similar situation. Task forces are a way of avoiding activity. And also, I mean, it seems to me that what you need to do is have everybody start pissing into a jar and then announce to the city council that you will be, as a public health measure, bringing this waste material down to give to the city council members to pass on to the mayor to eliminate so that it can be properly disposed of since you have no sanitary facilities. In fact, we should do that in Santa Cruz as well.
Yeah, well, I know where there's a big bucket of shit I could go get right now and haul down to the city hall.
I mean, I think if they heard that that was happening, you would suddenly discover porta potties and dumpsters at these sites.
Well, you're right. You know, one of the things that we lack here is a mobilized homeless force that of people that are thinking about these kinds of creative actions that will carry them out. I was talking to a group from San Jose that was in Fresno yesterday on a tour. It's called the Journey for Justice. And there's a group from San Jose named called CHAM. Are you familiar with them?
Community Homeless Alliance Ministry with a Reverend Scott Wagers,
Yeah, they were here, and they were. I was talking to them yesterday afternoon, and visiting some of the homeless encampments, and they sounded like in San Jose, the homeless people mobilized themselves to attend city council meetings and hold rallies, and got some of their demands met. You know, that's one of the things I think that has to happen here. We've got a lot of things going on, a lot of exposure of the problem. We've got a lawsuit focusing on the problem, but the homeless themselves are not being active in the process as much as I think they need to be. Any thoughts about that?
Well, I think, you know, that actually CHAM was not homeless people that themselves suddenly decided to jump up and, you know, fight back. I think it was began as a project of the San Jose State University when Scott Wagers and his partner Nancy Chase were students there. They did a project where they began mobilizing and organizing. Scott was inspired by Terry Messman and the Oakland Union of the Homeless. He was inspired by Paul Bowden and the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, and by Cesar Chavez and United Farm Workers Movement, Martin Luther King, Poor People's Movement from way back, way back, way back. And they, you know, they started doing things like occupying buildings and, you know, blocking traffic, going into city hall meetings and sitting down and demanding action. And they got action, you know. I mean, I have one of the few occasions in which I've been actually convicted of disrupting a meeting was when I was in a group of 22 people who we just sat down at the city council meeting, you know, in front of the mic and They arrested us, but then they opened up the shelter we were demanding later. It wasn't a shelter. It was actually housing. Mm-hmm. We weren't looking for shelter. We were looking for housing for families. So, you know, it takes a vanguard group to at least, I mean, it takes education in the community, but it also takes groups that are willing to try to lead. I'm not a big Leninist myself, but, you know, I think that you gotta step forward, take, you know, and sometimes that leadership can come from the homeless community. I mean, a lot of homeless people are involved in the Community Homeless Alliance ministry, but they, you know, the main people at the top, so to speak, are live in houses, and that's been my experience.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that isn't necessarily true. There's a protest that will be beginning in Arcata called the People's Project, which I think I sent you an email on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's supposed to be a little hush-hush, but they're going to be setting up a tent city up there. And it doesn't sound like it's coming from houses. It sounds like it's coming from unhoused people.
Right.
So it
right.
can happen. You know, I mean, I think... you know, court decisions can empower people, make them feel, you know, hey, we do got constitutional rights, you know, until Roberts and Alito and the Supreme Court take them away, of course. You know, but I think it ultimately comes, you know, I guess people organize themselves, and to some extent, I mean, I'm actually kind of wandering around in a somewhat contradictory haze here, because in the main, I guess it's a mixture of housed and unhoused that get together and do it. And if you can find, have you found any activists in Fresno among people who are homeless who are consistently interested in this kind of organizing?
You know, the people that are involved, the people that I know, are not leaders. They're not. Getting a critical mass of people to speak up on their own behalf, and I think that that's at some point going to be a real problem unless some leadership emerges that starts moving in that direction. What you have here, and one of the things that Tom, this group from San Jose, was kind of interested in and noted, was how big the encampments are becoming here. There are encampments now that there's, you know, hundreds of people, dozens and dozens of tents, taking up large swaths of land. And their comment was, well, and this isn't even like an organized protest or anything. This is just people who are surviving.
They're kind of Hoovervilles.
It's a Hooverville. And it's quite large. Now they've constructed a shower and out of some wood and a plumbing supplies, and they have a little community there. So people are sort of isolated in the south part of downtown on these large encampments, but they're not mobilizing to take action like you or I would think about. Well, let's go down to City Hall and, you know, take our pitchforks and torches and demand a change. They're very happy and very excited about the lawsuit that's taking place. And in fact, that has encouraged resistance in homeless encampments when the police have come to try to move them out. They cite the fact that they have rights now. And the police are at least being more careful than they were before. They're not being choir boys, but they certainly are cognizant of the fact that there's a restraining order against them from destroying homeless people's property, and they know that there's a legal team here that's watching everything that they do. So the amount of police brutality against the homeless has diminished somewhat.
Has there been any wholesale movement of homeless people from any of the large encampments? In other words, have police moved homeless people out of any particular area en masse?
Well, the largest incidence of that was about 2 weeks ago by Roding Park. There was probably 20 people living in tents on the west side of the largest.
Yeah, I think actually we talked about that on the air, but I'm thinking in terms of you've got more than 8,000 at a minimum living in Fresno were homeless. You were telling us earlier, it might be more like 10 to 15,000. I don't know.
Who knows?
Have you gotten any reports of increased sighting of people, meaning like giving them tickets, for simply, you know, I guess in Sacramento and San Diego, they use 647J, the state lodging law. In Santa Cruz, they use the sleeping ban, a municipal code. I mean, different laws in different places. But the main point is to tell them, get the fuck out of town or get out of here. Yeah. Where here isn't any particularly, you know, unusual place. It's just a place. In fact, it's usually an out-of-the-way place that people have found just to be able to pitch a tent and survive. Has that been happening, or have you noticed an upsurge of tickets? Is anybody monitoring that?
Well, you know, I have my ear pretty close to the ground on that stuff, and I hear about things happening, but I don't see a pattern, and it's not like it's increased lately. There's always harassment on an individual basis. You always hear.
Still there? Mike?
We may have.
Sounds like we lost Mike here. Mike? Okay, well, that was Mike Rhodes from Fresno, California, talking about essentially what may well be a significant victory for homeless people. The Fresno mayor announced 2 days ago that they would set up a so-called homeless center in the downtown area, which would provide homeless people with a place to put up tents, portable toilets, trash bins, and a facility, probably a trailer, where homeless people can get information about social services. And my concern was that this was done by the mayor to head off a proposal just to give homeless people porta potties and dumpsters as an interim measure to provide them with some kind of minimum sanitary facilities in the campgrounds where they campsites where they currently are. And to me, this is significant for a number of reasons. I mean, you need these facilities not just because you want to not, you know, live in a shithole where, you know, or you shit where you eat. Not just because you want to protect your own health and safety from disease and so forth, and some homeless people have, you know, families, but also because the community looks askance at homeless people who are, you know, and they say, oh, you're dirty and filthy and you want to use our restrooms. You know, that becomes a big issue. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, it's Mike in Fresno again.
Hey, Mike, welcome back.
I wore my battery out talking to you.
Oh, for God's sake.
Well, look, I was going to tell you about one more thing,
uh-huh.
If I could, and then I've got to run. I'm going to go out and show this video on this. It was on PBS Now about Housing First, a project in New York. And I was going to show this video to a homeless group over by Roding Park.
Housing First.
Think.
Is it Giuliani's kick them out of town first and then babble about housing? Right.
We could talk about that. I watched the show and it sounded interesting. I mean, what they do is they just like put homeless people in apartments or housing, and there's no expectation of them to like stop drinking or their mental health is immediately cured or anything. They could stay in the house forever and they are not going to get kicked out. It's sounds like a, you know, way to end homelessness to me if you put people in houses.
Sure, if in the meantime you aren't arresting people on the streets for doing what they need to do.
Well, yeah, that goes without saying.
But unfortunately in New York City, it says without going. That's the problem.
Say that again?
In other words, in New York City, they're continuing to massively harass poor and homeless people in spite of such token programs as Housing First. That's my understanding.
Okay.
Again, I speak out of, to some extent, a bias, and to some extent out of ignorance, but I think I suggest for you to get in touch with the Street News, the editor of Street News, Indio Washington, who might have at least more information on this than I do, and whether the program actually has a significant impact on the majority of homeless people or a significant minority, or whether it's one of these continuum of care fund magnet programs that they use to get grants for middle-class people and entrepreneurs, you know, that sort of thing, consultants and all that.
I went to this continuum of care meeting about a week ago. Did I tell you about that?
Tell us about that.
I took Dee, who's a homeless woman from the Roding Park area, with me. Her question was, how could they be getting millions of dollars in money that's supposed to go to help the homeless, and none of it
gets to us. And so I, well, why don't you come and, you know, we'll find out how that happens. So we go to this meeting, and it's, you know, me and her and all these agencies that are at the table. And it's, you know, drug rehab centers, it's county mental health, you know, different groups like that. Agencies are figuring out how to divide up the money that's coming into Fresno from HUD, the Housing and Urban Development from Washington, D.C. So there's $4.9 million coming to Fresno in the near future through grants that are coming up. And so they were talking about, they allocated money for three things that day. Counting the homeless. They're going to do another count. I mean, it's like, hello, you know, we don't need to study the problem to death. We know homeless people, you know, are there.
No, no, no. They want to count them so they can get paid for them.
Yeah, that was what they were doing. Right. They were like, you know, saying, we got to do this so we can get the money to count them. And then another one, another thing that they allocated money for was somebody to go to a conference. And then the third thing was they were paying a grant writer to write the grant. They're going to give them $5,000 to write the verbiage on how to get the money from the HUD grant.
How to get more money.
Yeah. So and the money was being divided up to these groups, one of which is Genesis. It's a basically a drug rehab center here in Fresno, but they used the language needed to get the grant. And interestingly enough, the director and co-director of Genesis is on trial for embezzlement in Fresno County Courthouse, like this week. Just as chance would have it, the allegations, I don't know if they're true or not, but they're being tried for using their corporate credit card to buy jewelry, clothes, and trips to Cancun.
Guilty until proven wealthy.
So as your guest, the person you interviewed, was talking about how many homeless people had died last winter and then the summer before. I was thinking, and this person was taking trips to Cancun on the homeless money that was coming to Fresno. Now, if that's not a crime, I don't know what is.
Well, that's why I think in the end, you know, trolling for government grants or relying on the fanciful words of mayors who've already shown that they are ignorant, bigoted, intractable, and completely irrational on the homeless subject, as Mayor Autry is. You got to be very careful when you do that. I mean, I think you got to go for the gusto, look for the real plumbing, so to speak. And I mean, if you can get them to actually turn out porta potties and dumpsters to homeless campground areas, I mean, that should be the immediate objective right now, you know? People are crapping on the ground out there, man.
Well, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, we might not agree on the same reasons for doing it. He might be doing it because he's forced to politically, but
he's not doing anything, though. He is not doing anything about that issue, nor are your friends on the city council while they sit around waiting for something to happen. I mean, if they were serious, they would be doing something immediately about this issue, which isn't waiting 45 days or 30 days or 20 days or 10 days or 5 days. I mean, I know that you're saying, well, you know, you've got to be more optimistic. I think what you need to do is be more demanding. You need to say, we thank you. Now bring the porta potties down tomorrow, or we'll be at city council the next day saying, where the hell are the porta potties? We'll have a nice long line into the mayor's restroom. You know,
that would be sweet.
Oh, yeah.
That would be sweet.
A shit-in, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I would make that demand if I had, you know, if the homeless people themselves were pushing for that.
Right.
But I can't make that demand out of thin air.
I understand.
I can do what I can do, and you know, I wish that they were out there yesterday, but you know, I'm optimistic that we're moving in the right direction. And what I tell everybody is, this isn't the end game in this. This is simply, we're trying to turn this ship that's been going in the wrong direction for a really long time and trying to get it to go in a better direction. And we've just started that process. Hey, I wanted to tell you one more thing before I go, and I'm going to have to go in a little while. And that is that I just got a California Public Records Act request back today from the city of Fresno. And what I had asked them was about the Reverend Arce and the rescue mission in downtown Fresno. Lori and her husband, who were you interviewed earlier on the show, were saying how the Reverend Arce has his crew that goes out to the homeless encampment near the rescue mission, takes people's property and throws it in his dumpster. And usually people don't get it back. Occasionally they do. They'll go and dumpster dive and get their stuff and take off. We've had cases where he's actually called the police on people who are taking back their property that he's stolen from them and had the police contact them about that, which I think, you know, takes a lot of chutzpah on his part to he's stolen their property, they've reclaimed it, and he's calling the police on them. But anyway, be that as it may, he said to Lori and to several other people that he has an agreement with the city of Fresno to keep the streets of G Street clean. That's how he's gotten his nickname, the King of G Street. I got an email back from the city. Talked to the public information officer today, and she told me that there is no agreement on his cleaning up G Street, which comes as no surprise to me. I would have been much more surprised if they'd handed me over a document saying, yes, we have an agreement with Larry Arce to take and immediately destroy homeless people's property on G Street when it's on public property.
The Public Records Act was helpful in having you get that.
It was.
Yeah, I mean, the thing you probably should do if you ever follow up on it is ask for any emails, public documents, correspondence, notes, memoranda that mention this guy's name, because it could be that there were discussions with him, very interesting conversations, you know, that meetings that he was at where minutes were taken, when you can get that kind of information. We've been talking with Mike Rhodes of Fresno, of the, what are you of anyway, Peace and Justice Center, is that it?
Community Alliance newspaper.
Whoops, I'm sorry there, Mike.
That's okay.
So, Mike, give us a number or an email you can be reached in case people want to try to catch you.
Sure. Best way to get in touch with me, if you have email, is it's my name, Mike Rhodes, MikeRhodes. @comcast.net.
That's Mike Rhodes @comcast.net.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you, and keep up the reporting, and keep those cameras snapping out there, the cameras you distributed among homeless people that actually made your case in federal court.
I will do that, Robert. Nice talking to you.
Good talking to you, man.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open for the next 8 minutes or so before I hit the road. 427-3772 is the number to call. And just a couple of announcements. The new Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper that you occasionally still see being distributed every now and then downtown. Often it's at the Tuesday night, sometimes the Wednesday night, meal and sing-along or food distribution and sing-along in front of New Leaf Market on Pacific Avenue. It's available. It should be available in the library shortly. I'm going to try to get a copy there. Put in the copy. You can always go online, although I don't know if the editor has actually updated his website, but it's a good website, thestreetspirit.org. The Huff website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has been updated recently, though it's still a little bit chaotic. You can still check it out. That's where these shows, the ones you're listening to right now, the one you're listening to right now, and several hundred before it, many hundred before it, are archived, or at least the last hundred or so are archived. That's at www.huff.santacruz.org. There's going to be a shindig on Cabrillo College campus. I kind of hoped that there would be a posting on indiebay.org, but that hasn't happened yet. Maybe we can get the posters to do some posting. Homeless activist Matt Marks, a Cabrillo College student who was very articulate in standing up to the Scotts Valley City Council when it passed its latest sleeping camping ban last winter, is holding an event on campus along with, I guess, others
that runs from 11 to 2. His actual segment of it runs from 12:30 to 2. And when you get in for more information, show up in front of the theater sometime after 11, where there's going to be tables set up. I think the Human Rights Organization, a group that's been fighting against the sleeping ban and the downtown anti-homeless ordinances for several years now, will be tabling there. And you can get a sense of what's cooking. Some Huff members, perhaps even me, you might even find me wandering around there. And if you want to catch me off air, you can give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the number for Huff and for me. On Sunday, when I come back from 9:30 to 1, I'm hoping to have a couple of interviews. I'm hoping to corral Becky Johnson to talk about the Roger Minch case. He's my former producer who produced this show and was a member of the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, to my recollection, even though nobody else remembers, until she was decommissioned by a vote of the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective. She does a show called Club Cruise on TV, and although half of it is Zionist twaddle, in my view, the other half is great homeless stuff and civil rights that I'm fully supportive of, and I'm really take my hat off to her for putting out that kind of information. She also is concerned about the drug war and the war on medical marijuana, which continues, and Roger Minch is a victim of that war. He is one of the people that has been prosecuted by Bob Lee for distributing medical marijuana based on Lee's theory that any distribution center is illegal unless you are a caregiver, which means like being part of a collective that grows your own marijuana or provides health and housing services at the same time. So she may be on the air. We'll see if we can get her on, along with her interview with Roger Minch. Also, Sally Zinman, who is going to be on the air with me tonight, who is an activist fighting to defend the rights of mental health, so-called mentally ill-labeled people. You might call them psychiatric survivors, if you will. She's up Berkeley way, works in Sacramento. She was fighting to make sure that people so labeled still retain some rights and even might get some services if they want them, other than simply shots of Prolixin or lithium or whatever the latest atypical drug of the moment is. Sally is hopefully coming on Sunday. She was going to come on this evening, but she couldn't. I don't know what happened to my L.A. can man, Joe Thomas, on the Skid Row update. I've had a lot of trouble getting a response from him, though I have had an interview with Becky Dennison, I think her name was, also of that group, which holds public protests, gathers information, stands up for the rights of people in Skid Row in Los Angeles, and I commend them for it. So that's coming. Some of this stuff will be coming back on at least the interview with Sally Zinman, maybe more information about Roger Minch and an interview with Becky Johnson on that on Sunday. We'll see if that happens. Who knows? Maybe I can coax Anita Henry to come on the air after her long absence. And I've got a lot of stories, rather gloomy stories, about medical marijuana centers being closed down or banned. And I don't mean by the feds. I mean by the local bigots. I was going to read some stories from Iraq. Sorry we shot your kid, but here's $500 by Greg Mitchell is a story, which you can read yourself. In fact, that's probably the best thing to do. Go to counterpunch.org, and you can check it out. I'm going to vacate a little early tonight to give Uncle Dennis, who's going to be following up with From the Cream to the Dregs, a little extra time to chat with you and, who knows, maybe hoist a beer or two and do his usual shtick, which is an enjoyable one and probably one that a lot of folks have come to expect and appreciate. I'll be back again on Sunday, as I said. In fact, I may be coming in early. I do have a sort of a family crisis, so there's a possibility you may hear a repeated show or some talk show substitute host, assuming that we can get him to the studio on time or not, as the case may be. Anyway, I appreciate your listening to this show and all the many callers who called in who couldn't get in because the lines were flooded. I apologize, but you'll have another opportunity on Sunday. And perhaps we'll talk then. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. We'll be right back.
loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful, give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
Fresh Stratton Warthog closed down their shop. They didn't want to. It was all they had got. Selling atonal apples, amplified heat, and Pressed Rat's collection of dog legs and feet. Sadly, they left, telling no one goodbye. Pressed Rat wore red jodhpurs, the warthog in striped tie. Between them, they carried a three-legged sack. Went straight round a corner and never came back. Pressed Rat and Warthog closed down their shop. The bad Captain Madman had told them to stop. Selling atonal apples, amplified heat, and Pressed Rat's collection of dog legs and feet. Bad Captain Madman had ordered their fate. He laughed and stumped off with a nautical gate. The gate turned into a derogatory, and his peg leg got woodwork. Broke into three. Pressed Rat and Warthog closed down their shop. They didn't want to, which was all they had got. Selling atonal apples, amplified heat, and Pressed Rat's collection of dog legs and feet.
Little thing from an album from a long time ago to welcome you into From the Cream to the Dregs. And that, of course, was The Cream, a little thing called Pressed Rat and Warthog. And I'm neither of those. I'm your Uncle Dennis, here for a few hours at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 www.freakradio.org. Stay tuned. Brew of the Week's coming up. And, of course, at 9 o'clock we'll have the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And then at 10 o'clock we'll have our Spotlight Group of the Week. We got to figure out who that is. And of course, we're going to play a whole lot of music between now and then. So let's turn to The Who.
Happy Jack wasn't old, but he was a man. He lived in the sand at the Isle of Man. Kids would all sing, he would take the wrong key. So they rode on his head in the furry donkey. Kids come to check, they try. They drop things on his back. Stop Jack, all the water's happy. La, 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 la.
jack or the water tapping. And they couldn't prevent Jack from being happy.
Why don't we do?